This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, one of the big talking points here at the Singularity South Africa Summit is the use of immersive technologies. And we've all heard of virtual reality, augmented reality. Some of us have played around with the Oculus Rift, and Samsung's device, when it arrived in my grubby paws, was fascinating for a number of reasons. One of the first impressions I had was the potential for this technology to improve education. It's such an immersive thing. That said, though, despite billions of dollars being invested in this nascent technology, we're yet to see it really go mainstream. Now, in my pop-up studio here, I've got Rachel Sibley, who's a futurist, artist, and strategist, really specializes in this beyond just speaking conversational Arabic and all the other things that you do. Rachel, great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
When it comes to this nascent technology, I mean, you've been named by Wired as one of the women to watch in VR. You've advised companies like Rolls-Royce. How have you seen the technology evolve? Because it has been with us for some time.
The first VR headsets were so heavy you had to mount them on the ceiling so they wouldn't crush your skull. To have moved from that to a slot-in device where your mobile phone can power a basic experience, granted, not a nuanced user experience design, but nonetheless a remarkable transition. And that's what we see across the board in technology. We've all heard of Moore's Law. We understand why that is. But what's really critical for us to think about with these new technologies is, where can we solve a real human problem? Otherwise, we're throwing spaghetti at a wall. And there are ways to think about that concretely as a business leader and also just as a citizen or a concerned parent. We have to be having that conversation more frequently.
And that is, I think, what business is grappling with. A lot of businesses don't want to be the early adopters or the leaders here. They'd rather be fast followers. So I'm sure they're saying, well, the technology is still being developed, the ecosystem, the developers are now coming online. We've seen the hardware improve. No longer are you at risk of losing your head and being crushed. The technology is moving. When are we reaching that tipping point of the when it's going to become mainstream?
Mainstream means different things depending on the industry you're in. Technology, as we know, tends to proliferate military, enterprise, consumer. To a large extent, that's because of the amount of resources, money, that is available to invest in the technologies at different stages. So you really do have to look to that price point to see these inflections, where it can transition. Right now, military has been using these immersive technologies for a long time. Enterprise is really now legitimately entering the space. And I speak to the leaders in the industry on that and help find those sweet spots of problem solving that can really be addressed with this technology, where you can create either more efficiencies and save money or to create totally new paradigms of what's possible. There's a very large spectrum here, from the linear problem solving to the essentially imaginative problem solving. But what you're talking about is that inflection towards consumer. And we're actually just seeing the forerunners of that now. If you're nerdy, like my friends, you look at the iOS code that's released to the developers, so you know that there are allusions to an augmented reality headset already in the existing Apple code. You watch Facebook's announcements of Horizon VR virtual worlds, and you think, my goodness, what could a platform like Facebook with so many global users do if they wanted to invite those users into a virtual world? So we're seeing these precursors now, and I mentioned this because I think it's really important for business leaders to pay attention to those transitions, to watch these emergences, and to leverage them in unique ways. But not only business leaders, our makers are really our forerunners. They show us the future. This is what developers did in the early days of the iPhone for the iPhone app ecosystem, which now is rich and thriving, but once upon a time, was emergent and new. I know this because my partner developed the first flashlight app for the iPhone when he was 13, and that, you know, those moments existed. So we're seeing those moments now again in this space, because in the last couple of years, we've got things like ARKit and ARCore released by Google and Apple respectively that have democratized access to building in this space, so that no longer are we restricted to the content zones of the early adopters, which were essentially film and gaming, because those are the people who'd worked with technologies that looked like this. So if you got a hammer, everything's going to look like a nail. Are you going to build something for the medical industry in VR if you're an early adopter and you don't have any experience building games? Probably not, which is why we need these business leaders from diverse fields to know about this technology, because these high-impact use cases that will solve real humanitarian issues and business issues come from those kinds of convergences.
And let's talk about some of those opportunities, those real-world problems that virtual reality, augmented reality is best suited to solve. And I think of a mining precinct project here in South Africa where they're starting to trial the use of virtual reality goggles to help train workers on the mine in very dangerous circumstances and situations that actually remove them from any physical danger. That's certainly one that springs to mind for me. Where do you see the big opportunities?
So one of the models that I offer leaders when they're thinking about where the opportunity zones are is, it's an easy thing to remember. Think of DELTA. You want to create change. D-E-L-T-A stands for design, D, expertise and education, E, L, logistics, T, try before you buy, which is basically marketing and consumer experience of products in virtual worlds, and analytics, which is a little more nuanced. But what you're talking about really in this model would fall into the convergence of a design use case and also a high risk scenario. So having the thrill without the threat, or having the challenge without the danger. This is used for example, football players who need to run through plays but not get concussed before a game. This is used for Navy SEALs who need to be, military combatants, these were the early use cases, who need to simulate a very high risk, high stress environment and optimize for that environment. So there are so many domains. Mining, of course, is very relevant for South Africa as one of the major emerging, or not emerging, but increasing industries. And so these technologies in that specific domain, for example, health and safety training, huge. Also designing mine structures, keeping people far from harm and being able to visualize what your mine looks like, how it's evolving, where you want to create investment while keeping your people safe. And this really brings up a critical point that we need to be thinking about as leaders, which is what could machines and AI essentially be doing that humans don't need to do anymore? And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Could we conceive of that as a gift, as an opportunity, as opposed to a threat? And we really need to reframe that conversation.
Most definitely, it's a conversation we're having in South Africa around automation and mining, because human flesh and bone doesn't really do very well 2-3 kilometers underground at that heat. If there's a rock fall, if anything goes wrong, we lose a lot of people. So rather to use machines in that sense, the job losses, though, are inevitable. So how are you going to reskill and retrain that that workforce to perhaps control the drones above ground? And that's really what I think policymakers are grappling with at the moment. I want to focus a little bit more on the opportunity. And certainly I see a big opportunity set in education. This whole idea of immersive learning. So just talk to me about the benefits of an immersive learning experience versus the kind of typical industrial classroom that we've grown up with.
Absolutely. It's such an important thing for us to be focused on. And this actually is not a new insight. It was codified by Edgar Dale, Maria Montessori, and Montessori education. Even Confucius mentioned the fundamental truth that we know now from cognitive science as well, that we learn best through our bodies. Confucius said, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. And that interactive immersive learning has been shown by someone like Edgar Dale in the 1960s to show such high returns. After 2 weeks, we tend to remember 10% of what we hear and 30% of what we see, whereas we remember 90% of what we say and do. So how could we not frame our education system around the latter? Why would we want a print-based education system? Oh, because it scales. Because the printing press allowed us to democratize access to knowledge in a massive way. But remember, the printing press originally, it was about the Bible. It wasn't about all the millions of things that we read now to learn. And similarly, VR and AR are about, in many people's minds, gaming or entertainment. But it's about so much more than that. This is a scaling mechanism. And when we try to think about the real impacts here, let's talk about education. Because this is, my parents founded a Montessori school. This is so close to my heart. I just see so much opportunity here for immersive learning, because immersive learning costs a lot. It happens in private schools, but it doesn't happen in so many places. And especially in Africa, there's so much opportunity for impact. If we could educate the entire population of Africa with the best form of education that has been digitized and scaled, that would be such a win. It could transform an entire, it would transform the world, quite seriously.
It really would. The demographics of Africa are the world's largest young population after
Absolutely.
2050. It becomes a huge demographic dividend if harnessed correctly, and one hopes that the policymakers are thinking strategically about how to do this.
Correct. And here's the center right here. When you can dematerialize something and digitize it, i.e. take it out of hard knock on it wood and put it into pixelation, suddenly everyone can play with it. It's not only one person that can hold the object. 1 million people can hold that digital object. That is what I'm talking about when I say that we could scale immersive interactive learning.
Exponentially. Now, for a company approaching this, they may not have the skills in-house to design virtual worlds. What is the best approach? Partners with the expertise, and how should they be thinking about starting to bring this into their businesses?
Yeah. This is a role that I often play because one of the challenges of the space is it's the Wild West. It's still so early that if you don't understand it deeply, you can make a lot of mistakes, and those can be very expensive mistakes. And so the first piece is to really understand the use case you're going after. You do not want to throw spaghetti at a wall with this technology. It's too expensive at this point to do that still, even though it's getting cheaper. So one is to really identify the problem set and the use case. And then you need to find the leadership expertise to lead the project at the design level, but you also really have to have those coders, that implementation. And today, the highest level skill set is generally AAA game developers, because those are the people who've been designing for immersive 3D environments for decades. Soon, this will democratize as well. This is a new skill set. So if people are listening and interested in what might my children do that doesn't exist now, I talk often about the Wixification of the virtual world. So, for example, in the early days of the internet, it was very hard to build a website, and it was a very high-value skill. And it still is in the more complex scenarios. And yet, today, any person listening to this could, if they got onto a computer, get online, couple of hours, done. So building out these virtual worlds will become democratized. Right now, we're not there. So if you're wanting to do this and you're wanting to build out a virtual reality space, a AAA game developer is a great resource. But there are also other skill sets applicable here. Architecture, even improvisation. Amazing AI is going to be critical for a lot of this to make these experiences meaningful. So you really can't speak about these technologies in isolation. You really have to think about the convergences of things like AI, virtual reality, augmented reality, even things like blockchain if we want to think about privacy.
Well, it is a thoroughly fascinating area of conversation. Unfortunately, Rachel, we've run out of time. We've got to be talking about ethics straight after this, so perhaps I'll leave that to Alex. Rachel, great pleasure meeting you.